anywhere. I mean, anywhere I would be given a chance to stay, I would treat it like a mansion. I mean, it would be like my everything.
That was Aaron Edmund. He said he last took a bath maybe more than 7 months ago. He's known as Crooked Eye or Crook. In the 90s, he was a member of the hip-hop duo Steady Mobbin, whose first record made the Billboard Top 40. Now he is homeless in Oakland. And that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for paid six-month internships here in New York City studio. Learn more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Dina Geisler, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wells, Tammy Warrenoff, Libby Rainey, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Nadura, Tamaria Studio, and Maria Tarasena. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Attention Henry Ford students. The college's winter 2020 semester is fast approaching. Here are some important dates to remember. October 14th, winter 2020 schedule becomes available in the HFC self-service. October 28th, priority registration begins. October 14th, open registration for all students begins. December 23rd, HFC closes for end-of-the-year holidays. January 13th, classes begin. And January 19th is the last day of late registration. Please visit hfcc.edu for more information.
WHFR has brand new buttons, and we want you to have one for free. We are going old school with this promotion. Simply send us a postcard. Yeah, a real-life postcard with your name and address too. WHFR Attention Buttons, 5101 Evergreen Road, Dearborn, Michigan, 48128. Let us know if you like blue or black better.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Good afternoon. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. So nice to be back with you this Friday afternoon. We had a great show last week from the Mirror News crew, who did the Mirror News Now episode of the HFR Journal. And voila, we're here, right?
Mm-hmm. And happy to be here. This Indeed. Is sort of the Friday before all the festivities of the Halloween season, and you know, then we move into November, moving forward, and so on. But there's still a bit of October left, and mm-hmm. there are still a lot of important things going on this month. We are sort of commemorating some, you know, October is such and such month and such and such month, and one that we're going to focus on. Equally important, one we're going to focus on today is domestic violence awareness. So we will have a representative later in our show talking to us about means of support, ways to get assistance, and ways to just be informed, particularly here in the Dearborn community. So a representative from the First Step organization will be joining us. But before we get into that, sort of a nice way to round out the season of October is to talk about opportunities and possibilities. And when we talk about, anytime I hear the word possibilities, I think, imagine the possibilities. Literally, that is, I am ingrained to think that every time. And why is that? Because of the two ladies joining us in studio today, Alan, as you know. And so we have Diane Green joining us today and Dr. Brenda Hildreth, and they are here today to wear the hats of speaking on this next most exciting Imagine the Possibilities session coming up on October 30th. It is Wednesday. It is yes. coming up Wednesday. So it is literally right around the corner. And this is one of those non-traditional approaches to getting people connected to information that might literally change their lives. Something that they hadn't considered, or they considered, but everybody told them they were crazy and they shouldn't consider this. Well, we want to try to bridge that gap and get some support and get some information to both students and Absolutely. Members of our community. So, ladies, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to have you here. It's good to be back.
Pleasure. We look forward to the event on the 30th. Each one has its own sort of theme or personality. Tell us a little bit about this one. Diane, you want to start?
Yeah, this one, the fall Imagine the Possibilities seminar that we do is non-traditional careers in technology with a focus on women. And the areas that we bring to the table for women to experience, and I mean literally experience going into labs and seeing things being done, are within our technical area. We'll be looking at computer information systems, architectural construction tech. We have machine tool, industrial drafting. We round that out with our hospitality program. That's our one 4-year baccalaureate degree program we have on campus, and lots of individuals are interested in that. We look at criminal justice, and then Chad comes in, Chad Austin from our career services area, to say, okay, these are the kinds of things that you need to do to prepare yourself for going into these areas of work. So that's kind of the focus on this one. The spring one always focuses on our health careers and nursing with an emphasis on men.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of taking technical skills and learning how to apply them to things, well, non-humans, I guess, machines, whereas in the spring we apply those technical skills to human beings. So it's
correct.
Kind of a flip-flop of a thing.
Absolutely.
And as history has, I suppose, or will preserve the fact that oftentimes women are growing up in areas that they are nurtured into being healthcare professionals because
that's
this
right.
is the way their grandmother and their mother, you know, so on and so forth. And men more into the technical
the
industrial.
Hands.
Yes, yes,
absolutely.
Yes. So this is a bit of a flip-flop.
Yes.
But the thing that strikes me the most here, I think, ladies, is the career areas that you're speaking about and that will be represented are in some real need for workers, for people to make careers out of these fields. So this is something that could literally be a life-changing, long-term career opportunity.
Yes. And when you look at the state of Michigan and you hear the numbers of jobs that are available, we just need to do more of getting people into those areas to get the necessary training to be qualified to compete for those jobs.
Yeah. The event takes place on October 30th, and it's
it starts typically bright and early, right?
Bright and early. Typically an all-day kind of, or at least all morning into the afternoon, and usually you treat the guests very well with some snacks and maybe some lunch and some door prizes and things. Will all those festive-type things be going on as
usual?
It
will be. We try to make it a fun activity while they're learning, and everyone enjoys it.
Very nice.
What, in general, and obviously this, you know, this this event has taken place before. You know, what kind of students do you see that that you know show up and are interested in the event?
You know, that's interesting because I was just talking to Cynthia Anderson, who is Brenda's assistant in her office. And when we started this, and we started this back in 2006, the emphasis was on the older returning adult student, being able to identify those individuals and bringing them in, women, older returning women, to learn about technology, and the same with men. And we began to lose our older adult student population. That's one of the things that we're kind of focused on now is what do we need to do to bring back the older returning students? So I remember talking with Cynthia and said, well, okay, what do we do here? She said, let's reach out to the high schools. So we get a smidgen of older returning adults, but most of the participants now, wouldn't you say, Brenda,
yes.
are high school students?
They're high school students,
yeah.
Yes.
And it
seniors. We really want it to be seniors. We get some juniors.
Yes, but we prefer the seniors.
Yes. Yes.
And is it? And whatever, there's obviously, you know, a very diverse population of things. Is it, you know, is there still that situation of, you know, people coming out of high school, young women that don't think these fields are available to them? You know, as a dad of a daughter, I've, you know, hopefully impressed upon her that you can be anything you want, you can do anything you want. Is that you know what you're seeing, or that they're interested in these fields, or is it about coming and learning and discovering?
You're right on target. A lot of them never think of going into these areas. Mm-hmm. And so they haven't done any research because it just never dawned on them that those doors are open to them now. Once they go into the labs and they actually get to see the equipment, they're fascinated. And some of them do decide to go into those fields.
The other piece, too, is Roger Weeks always has a woman presenter. And that's in Drafting CAD. And the ladies come in, and usually they're dressed like they're coming in for work to do these demonstrations and to talk to the individuals who are participating. And I think also having that visual that, wow, there's someone who is doing this. I can do that. Our automotive last year, one of the faculty members is Ashley Smith, is one of the faculty in the auto, which makes it even that much more real in terms of this is a possibility, but they don't, as Brenda was saying, they just don't really necessarily think about that.
I find it fascinating you mentioning the CAD program and things like that, and not to call her out, but my wife, we've been married for but she's always said that she always wanted to be an architect, and as a young woman growing up in the 1980s, it may not have been as open to her as a, you know, at that point, very male-dominated field. So hopefully we've made some progress, right?
Oh, we have.
I think so.
We have. I think with the architecture program here, Chad Rickert kind of talks about, you know, those numbers continuing to increase. Are there a lot? No, but far many more than we would have seen in the past. And again, I think it's the participants, being able to see young women students in there, you know, hammering nails and drawing. They don't do them on the board anymore. Everything is computer.
Everything is
computer.
Exactly.
But I think it brings it to life for them that this is possible. But we still got a long way to go.
Oh yeah.
And getting young women to know that these are possibilities.
Yeah, yeah. But you're targeting the right people because it seems like it used to be we educated the parent to trickle it down to their children, to the student, and sometimes you're dealing with the bias from the parent who will not do that. You know, mm-hmm. they'll put that wall up and say, nope, that's not for her. She's going to go into this. Whereas targeting this, even the 12th grader, the high school student that, as you said, might never have considered this and getting mm-hmm. them in the door. And it's not a surprise. I mean, it's a very smart decision to be holding this event in the E building, in the technology building,
right,
because you're getting students to look at the labs and to sort of, you know, touchy-feely with the equipment and so on. So that, again, is the best way to give them the opportunity and let them know it's there.
Well, let's get back to the day. And, you know, you mentioned the e-building, the tech mm-hmm. building, sort of like where the day starts at, what, O-Dark 30?
No,
well, probably 7:30, 8 o'clock.
7:30.
Yeah, right. Well, it will be dark. I know that.
Yeah.
Because
daylight savings time, not until after that still, as I recall. Yeah.
Yes.
Next week.
So what is the day for the people who show up and go through this?
The date?
Everything.
Well,
give us a rundown.
Oh, when they arrive, there'll be an opportunity for them to meet the other people who are there. They'll have a continental breakfast. It's always prepared. And then the program starts with them finding out that there are support systems built mm-hmm. into our programs here. And so I tell them some of the services that my office will be able to offer, as well as Chad Austin coming in, and he encourages them to, if they do decide to come here, to come to his office the first semester so that they can start the process of looking for that job.
Mm. So 7:30 a.m.
Yes,
is where
and then we
meet.
Have a whole line of programs that we're going to expose the potential students to. And that includes visits to the lab, mm-hmm. and there's a lunch break. And after that, the program is pretty much over.
Don't you forget about them door prizes.
Oh, right.
That's the fun thing. They love
them. Who wouldn't? Yeah. It's the best part. Yeah, well, I'm looking. I just pulled the agenda up online, by the way. It's available on the HFC website, so you can certainly get more
HFCC.edu.
You got it. Right. And just like both of you talked about, not only learning about the different programs that are available, and available with support, which, again, is so important.
Absolutely.
To note. So if someone, it's difficult enough when you're sort of treading into something that you're not comfortable with, that you don't really understand, but you might be interested in, then feeling like you're doing it on your own is almost, you know, setting yourself up to fail. So taking advantage of the resources, and we've got lots of them, and I'm looking at two of them right here in our studio. That's certainly very important. So in theory, if somebody gets interested in this, they go through the sessions, they decide, I want to get into drafting, I want to get my degree in drafting, and then they come to the college and talk with somebody probably in advance and get mm-hmm. things set up. They literally can start on this pathway right off the bat, can't they?
Absolutely.
Yes.
A matter of them completing an application mm-hmm. to the college, submitting high school transcripts. If they've had prior college experience, submitting that college transcript, because that becomes very important. Mm-hmm. If their plan is to use financial aid, they need to go online and complete their FAFSA, mm-hmm. and they want to do that early because so many students end up registering and have mm-hmm. no money. So we really press upon them to do that early, and right at the same time they're doing everything else. And registration will be starting, open registration on October 31st. So they would be able to actually come in and register, provided they have all of those pieces in place. Mm-hmm. If their financial aid isn't in place, of course, we have our Easy Pay, mm-hmm. where they can make a down payment on their cost of tuition while they're waiting for their financial aid to be processed, in which case then they would be reimbursed once it was finalized.
Great. Now, you talk about that FAFSA process, and it is, you know, a bit of an enigma for a lot of people. I know FAFSA opened, October 1st, and what the deadline is here at HFC in order to be able to apply for things.
Well, there's not really a deadline per se as it relates to that. And I'm going to admit, I do not have the deadline on the top of my head in terms
sure.
of where financial aid will protect the students' courses.
Mm-hmm.
There is a deadline for that.
But what would be a resource they'd be able to turn to find that out?
That would be www.hfcc.edu, Student Services, Financial
Student
Aid.
Student Services. All right, very
yes.
good.
Yes.
Thank
We're
you.
Already looking at classes. They're already up there.
Oh, absolutely.
And on the website, we just can't register quite yet, but this is a good time to be looking.
Yeah, and students are coming in.
Yeah,
to get
good,
those classes.
Good. And when we talk about taking the classes starting right away and so on, we're talking first of the new year. Classes begin, what is it, January 13th, I think? They start a little later this year.
Oh, I hope you're right.
I think I am. You're welcome. You're welcome. The 12th or the 13th. Alan's going to check it out.
It's a late start.
But it literally is going to be here before we know it. You know,
it's
almost Thanksgiving, for crying out loud.
Thank
I mean,
you.
Yes, I said it. I know. You know, when we talk about these opportunities, this is not necessarily just for somebody that is not at our school, right? This could be for somebody that has another job already, or it could be for somebody that's in a program. Or maybe just doing the liberal arts thing, and they don't know what they want to do. So taking the day off, with permission from your teachers, of course, and even coming in for this event on the 30th might make sense for someone that is hearing this and thinking, never really thought about it. Yes?
Yes. And when students come to see me, even now, I tell them about this program, mm-hmm. and I'm speaking of the students who are not assured that they're in the correct program or they haven't made a choice at all. So it is open to students that are at Henry Ford already.
Great. Do we need to pre-register? And I ask this every time, and I always forget the answer. So can they just show up? Should they call ahead if they know they're coming?
Well, what do you think? We prefer that they register, but okay. Hey, come on down. We will welcome you with open arms. There's always room to accommodate individuals who are walking in to participate. The registering just helps us to have some sense of how much food we need in the morning and for lunch. Okay. But yeah.
Which, by the way, is all free. The whole thing is free.
Free.
The entire day is free.
Free.
That's a wonderful thing. How do we do this? How do we register? Who do we talk to? Who should we call? What do you think?
The students can call Cynthia Anderson. You want to give her information?
They can call Cynthia Anderson at 313-845-9757.
Easy enough.
845-9737?
9757.
Thank you. Sorry, my bad.
845-9757. Easy enough.
So you mentioned this event started, you think you said 2006?
Yes.
Without naming names, can you give us any examples of what you'd consider to be a success story? And you know, you know the students. Maybe you've seen their progression, and maybe you just have that one that you remember that has gone on to do great things.
You know, I hearken back. I don't know what Brenda's thoughts are. I hearken back to when we had our first economic meltdown in, what was that, in the 80s? And we were doing the spring event, which was focused on men. And I remember we had 62 men packed into the Hackett, standing room only. And there was one gentleman who was so calm. He ended up coming to Henry Ford and getting what he needed and finished. But he had really prepared himself so well for that day when he was going to get a buyout. So he, unlike the other people in the room, was very excited about the buyout and went on to do good things here in terms of the program he was pursuing, which was nursing.
So the moral of that story is it's good to have a plan.
Yes. And he had a plan.
Yeah.
He had a plan. Anyone you can think of, Brenda?
I can remember a young lady who came in and she really had no idea what she wanted to do. But when she went to that auto shop, she just lit up. And you knew that she had found her calling, so to speak. So it's really a delight to see that happen to students.
Someplace maybe she wouldn't have thought would have been her home, but
yes.
When she saw it, she's like, oh, yeah, this is me.
Uh-huh. And to get the permission, to give herself the permission, especially when she's seeing a woman teacher, let me give myself permission to do this.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, that gives me chills. That's how I felt the first time I walked into a radio station. I'm not kidding.
No,
like, for real. It was like, wow. It was like candy.
Yeah.
You talk about radio back in the, 18-whatevers?
That's great. That's great. Well, on that note, we're going to... Ladies, thank you again so much. We wish you much continued success. And frankly, just being able to talk about the fact that these resources exist for current students, potentially new students, returning students, is a wonderful thing. And it just makes me, you know, proud to be HFC. But also, you should feel invigorated that these continue over all these years and continue to sort of reinvent themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, it's no, like you said, your wife wanted to get into architecture at one point. The first thing that some people might think of, where to put the pillows and this and that. And it's like, no, that's not architecture.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's
exactly.
That's interior design. And that's not a bad thing either. But
she still wants to, by
she wants
the way,
to do that too.
Once she
yeah.
retires.
Isn't that wonderful?
That's her plan.
Yeah.
That's her next plan.
She
loves
to come on Wednesday and check this out. But, you know, I want to take this opportunity before we wrap up to thank you, because you have been a continued energizer and have been so supportive of this event, and we want to just thank you for that.
Yes. Well, appreciate that. That's
speaking
what we're
speaking of
for.
The event, yeah. I was going to say, let's go over the details next Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
right?
Wednesday
that's
the 30th.
October 30th.
Right around the corner, 7:30 until after lunch, right?
2 o'clock until, we'll finish up.
Great, great. And we call it our non-traditional careers seminar, and this focus again is on technology, so non-traditional careers in technology in the Ghaffari building, or the Ghaffari room, excuse me, the Ghaffari room in the E building, which is the technology building. It's E123, easy enough to remember, right? So show up at 7:30. If you can call ahead, it's 313-845-9757. Great success. Give us a report after the fact and let us know how many lives you've touched with this, okay?
Okay. We will.
Please do.
I assume the info is all up there at hfcc.edu
it
as
sure
well.
Is. Mm-hmm.
And it damn well better be. Because yeah, right? this is really one of the important events that takes place for a lot of students for a lot of reasons over the course of the year.
Absolutely. So. No doubt about it. It literally is, like I said in the beginning, this literally can be life-changing. And that's what this is supposed to be about. So we appreciate it. We have more important things to continue with on this discussion on the WHFR Journal this Friday. So please stay with us. There's more on the way.
Cliff Bells will be hosting a very special WHFR Jazz Benefit on Sunday, November 17th. Please join us for an evening of jazz improvisation starring Dave Hurley and the Outer Nebula Trio featuring Raphael, Bear Trap, Michael Malice's Exploration Ensemble, Planetary Citizenship featuring O'Donnell, Spangler, Bergman, Wallace, and CUNY. Doors open at 7 o'clock. All proceeds of the $10 donation entry fee go directly to the station. We hope to see you at Cliff Bell's on Sunday, November 17th for WHFR's Jazz Benefit. Please visit WHFR.fm for more information. Returning to WHFR this Halloween, Thursday, October 31st, is Treats, Not Tricks. Call us at 313-845-9676 anytime on Halloween Day from midnight to midnight and say, Trick or Treat, and we will send you a variety of fun items packed in one of our Trick or Treat grab bags. You can tell the DJ, leave a message, or email whfr@hfcc.edu with the words, Trick or Treat. Just be sure to let us know where to send your goodie bag. Only one per person, please. Don't miss out. Get your free WHFR Halloween grab bag this Halloween.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw. Thank you for being with us this Friday afternoon. And obviously, October is a very busy time mm-hmm. of year. We've already discussed Hispanic Heritage Month. We've talked about Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We've, you know, obviously talked about the non-traditional careers for women thing going on here at HFC. And but the job's not done yet.
No, it's not. And one of the most important opportunities that we have, not only through these airwaves, but particularly in the month of October, is to talk about Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And domestic violence is a year-round event, unfortunately, for everyone involved and for the greater community certainly as well. But we have an extra opportunity to be able to shed some light on this terrible and often sort of swept under the covers kind of an issue to hopefully get some support in the ears of people that can certainly use it. So whether you are directly involved involved as an advocate, as a supporter, as a survivor, as someone going through this right now, or a loved one or caregiver of someone that is, we want you to listen extra intently, because we want to provide some information that we hope will help change lives and maybe even save lives. Alan and I are certainly not experts on this subject, but we have brought somebody in via phone who is, and Jenny Hooper is on the line with us. And Jenny is the program coordinator for the community response team at the First Step Domestic Violence Shelter and Facility. And I'll tell you, anytime I get information about domestic violence in this Metro Detroit area, it often is coming from First Step because of the reputation and the history that this organization has with helping people move forward and move through domestic violence issues. So, Jenny, it is our pleasure to welcome you, and not only for your skill set, but also representing this amazing organization of First Step. We thank you for taking the time to phone in with us today.
Let's start by talking about what First Step is.
So First Step is the domestic violence and sexual assault agency that has been providing comprehensive supportive services to survivors in Wayne County since 1978.
It seems like, boy, the first time I heard about First Step was attending a function. It was a dance, and it was a fundraiser, and this was years and years ago, and it turned out a big crowd. It was in Livonia. Steve King and the Diddleys, if you can imagine, Alan. That's so Jenny, you're probably too young even to remember them. I don't know. But that was, you know, the first time I connected with the organization was for something fun and to help raise money for something I didn't know very much about. Certainly, It has grown, not only the support, but the services through First Step. So between when the agency began, when the organization started, and where we are now in 2019, what do you think might be some of the significant changes or issues that are being addressed, and frankly, improvements to the process of helping to get the word out to save lives?
I would say the significant changes that have really progressed over the years is, you know, the community partnerships that have been developed, you know, with the agency and, you know, throughout the whole community, not with just, you know, other systems such as law enforcement and, you know, prosecutors, and but also with other agencies that provide, you know, similar services or other services that would, you know, be beneficial to assist survivors, either through different processes or, you know, to provide that comprehensive approach to, you know, helping a survivor stay safe.
In looking on your website, understanding that there's more to it than the statement that I'm going to make, but taking this right from your site, sort of as the mission of First Step, it indicates since 1978, First Step has been working for peaceful families and safe communities in Wayne County, mm-hmm. Michigan. And I find it fascinating that peaceful families is certainly what we think about when we think about domestic abuse, domestic violence, and trying to get those that are being affected into an environment that is safe and peaceful, but also the concept of safe communities and sort of in a more general term through Wayne County, Michigan, because although this is an issue that can be considered very private and very isolated to those mm-hmm. directly suffering, it really is a community, a communal issue at large, if you will.
Absolutely. You know, when survivors are going through, you know, situations where, you know, they have to take time off of work, you know, that impacts the community. If they have to use, you know, go for medical services, that impacts the community. You know, survivors, you know, feeling isolated, they're not able to be a functioning part of the community and, you know, offer who they are without fear. So that does impact the community quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. When we use the term abuse, obviously, mm-hmm. first and foremost, we think of, you know, physical abuse, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But
absolutely.
There, yeah, and obviously that is, you know, probably one of the. And when we talk about survivors, people who've been able to escape a physically dangerous situation, there's also the issue of you know, emotional abuse and I'm struggling for the words for what it means, but I think you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, you know, and it's when people, you know, hear domestic violence, the first thing they often think of is the physical component to the abusive tactics. And, you know, the reality is that when it comes to domestic violence, it's all about the power and control. So that can include the intimidation that's used and the emotional abuse and, you know, minimizing and denying, you know, an abuser's role in causing that fear, or, you know, using economic abuse. And, you know, because, you know, there's oftentimes, you know, financial strain that comes along with a survivor that's, you know, trying to navigate any system after possibly leaving an abusive situation. And those different types of tactics are often used to keep that power and control. So domestic violence is not just physical, but it's other forms of that coercion and threats and, you know, different types of tactics that can keep that power and control, because it doesn't have to just be physical.
So when we speak of, you know, surviving domestic violence, obviously, I think probably first and foremost, a lot of attention goes to the physical mm-hmm. side of it. What are some of the support that goes to the other sides there?
So with, you know, emotional abuse and such, so we have, you know, services here at First Step. You know, we provide, you know, we have a 24-hour helpline where anybody can call in that is experiencing domestic violence in any form and, you know, be able to talk to somebody and have that crisis intervention or just the emotional support. We have counseling services for children and adults, and, you know, our children's advocacy and prevention programs start, you know, children can come in, you know, starting at the age of 3. Our adult advocacy programs with, you know, domestic violence, you know, they can have one-on-one counseling sessions, they can have, you know, group counseling sessions. You know, these are all different pieces that help support that survivor. And that's working with somebody that, you know, understands domestic violence and sees these other tactics and, you know, can, you know, walk with a survivor through that and help provide the emotional support, but also engage in other goals. If other goals are identified, you know, helping them, you know, start to feel comfortable and moving towards, you know, perhaps there's housing concerns. You know, we also have a transitional housing program. We do have a temporary emergency shelter program. So yeah, it's really trying to provide the survivor with any support that's identified.
One of the things that we often hear, Jenny, in a situation where someone didn't get help or didn't actively pursue a change or a way out, was feeling that it's that hopelessness. It's that I have mm-hmm. a family. I have to, you know, if I don't rock the boat, I won't have to. You know, the kids are okay.
I need to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How does that get countered, and how? And I, you know, the even the emotional side of healing from, you know, once the physical part heals, certainly the emotional scar is the one that I've always heard is the hardest to, you know, to get through. But you got to get there first, you know. So that whole thing about taking that first step, most appropriately, what your organization mm-hmm. is called. What are some ways that you help people to do that, to empower them so that they get to that point where they're going to take action?
Well, it starts with believing them. Oftentimes, you know, a survivor struggles with, you know, I mean, they're told multiple things in a relationship. They're told, you know, they're not, you know, worthy, that they're wrong, they couldn't do things, so their self-esteem takes a big hit. And so it's believing them. Sometimes, you know, a survivor is, you know, going through the process of feeling, you know, that they shouldn't be believed because maybe they're over-exaggerating. It's really having that support system that's there with them to talk to them, hear them. They may say their story multiple times. They may not talk about it at all, but it's being with that survivor and, you know, meeting the survivor where they're at. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody is, you know, at the same place when it's time for them to seek support. So that support looks different. And, you know, if it means that, you know, counseling is the route, then that might be something they're interested in. Maybe it's just calling into our helpline occasionally just to, you know, maybe process with somebody. And, you know, even going through maybe even the criminal justice system, you know, we have advocates that are located in multiple communities that will assist survivors through the criminal justice system if that's something that they need. You know, it's safety planning. And safety planning, you know, oftentimes is thought of, you know, because there could be a physical threat. Well, that doesn't always translate when it's an emotional support that they're looking for. So we do a lot of safety planning for emotional support. And that can look like, you know, what is the survivor going to do for themselves that day? Because it isn't something that has to be a long-term goal. It can be, you know, what can we do until tomorrow? You know, can we check in? You know, knowing that they can contact an advocate to have that support.
You're listening to the WHFR Journal. We're talking with Jenny Hooper from the organization First Step, discussing obviously a very serious topic of domestic violence. You mentioned contacting the helpline. We've been talking for 13 or so minutes. What is that helpline, and how can they get in touch with either your organization or other, you know, I mean, people listen to us all over the world online, you know, or organizations they can reach out to?
So our 24-hour helpline is something that, like it stated, 24 hours. And the number to that would be 734-722-6800.
734-722-6800, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And, you know, for those that are not in the, you know, area, there is a National Domestic Violence Hotline, and that number is 1-800-799-7233.
All right, that's 800-799-7233.
Yes. And when they call that number, you know, they would be connected with somebody, and, you know, if they, you know, tell them the location that they're in, they would be able to direct them to their local.
An opportunity to get in touch with a local organization. Yes, correct.
You know, Jenny, back in April, right here on our Henry Ford College campus, we hosted a domestic violence seminar. Congresswoman Debbie Dingell was in, and we had representatives from the various communities here in the Dearborn-Detroit area talking not only about domestic violence itself, but also some of the things that we maybe don't know, and I learned an awful lot at that seminar, relating to different cultural implications. And oftentimes, and I've even reading on your website, the idea of cultural barriers to be able to seek out help and get support. We have a very large Middle Eastern population here in the Dearborn community, and I recall having many Middle Eastern students and young women at this particular event that literally indicated that it is not their culture ever to speak up. How do you address that? How do you get through that? And what have you seen or experienced through First Step that might speak to that cultural issue here in our local community?
Yeah, that's, I used to actually be the advocate that had worked in the Dearborn community. I have, you know, First Step partners with the Dearborn Police Department and actually, you know, has an advocate that works on site there. And, you know, some of the, you know, experiences I had is that, you know, it was something that, you know, survivors felt that, you know, was a very private matter, and that it included, you know, families. It wasn't just between, you know, partners. It would be between families. And, you know, sometimes that was a struggle for them to, you know, want to seek help because, you know, oftentimes, you know, those situations would be handled inside the families. And some of the survivors that I had worked with, you know, it would be something that, you know, especially if there were language barriers, you know, we have, you know, translation services, so we would have an interpreter available, so that would make things easier. But we also had partnered with Access, so that is the domestic violence advocate had also, Access domestic violence advocate had also been inside the police department. So that would be something that, you know, they would also be able to connect with that agency. You know, we've been able to have survivors, you know, from that community, you know, in our shelters, and, you know, we wanted to make sure that, you know, we're providing everything that they need as well. You know, if there's, you know, certain food items that they would need, we want to make sure that we have that. So it's, you know, listening to, you know, some of the barriers that they feel that they're facing and, you know, trying to meet them so we can, you know, lower those barriers. If that means, you know, using interpreters or, you know, discussing the criminal justice system a little more in detail or advocating for survivors that, you know, don't want to prosecute. Mm-hmm. So it's really having those in-depth conversations and, you know, trying to provide those supportive services, you know, any way that we can.
Yeah, I often hear about sort of shaming the family if someone were to speak out setting the wrong example for the children and so on, which just kind of boggles my mind. But unless you're in that situation, you really can't walk in those shoes. So I do understand that. You know, we've been talking about reactionary support. We've been talking about issues related to those that are in this experience, that are going through some form of domestic abuse, sexual assault. With the most recent, I suppose, Me Too movement going on nationally and even internationally, the concept of prevention at this stage of the game, I'm sure, would be sort of a key component to helping to stop this cycle of violence in our communities. What's happening through First Step to focus on prevention? And I'm sure certainly education is critically relevant as a part of that process as well.
Definitely. You know, we do a lot of the community education piece with, you know, we have staff that will go into schools and other agencies and religious organizations and, you know, medical and, you know, like I said, we partner with police officers. So, you know, we do have advocates that will go in and do a lot of the educational piece. And, you know, we have our children's advocates that will go into the schools and, you know, partner with the teachers there and provide that preventative approach with, you know, education, you know, for our young people. You know, our young folks, and, you know, try to get that information out there and talk to them about the different, you know, myths or, you know, issues that they may see and, you know, be that support. Because, you know, there have been times that, you know, when an advocate is talking, you know, it isn't abnormal for, you know, somebody that's in the audience to come up and, you know, either share their story or, you know, talk to us about, you know, some of the concerns that they have and things that they're seeing and, you know, talk about the safety planning. And, you know, the thing is with domestic violence is it's something that, you know, it touches everyone, either directly or indirectly.
Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when you talk about, you know, the physical violence and being scared, you know, for your own safety or your own life, for that matter, oftentimes that includes, you know, children that may be in the house. What kind of services are available to sort of connect to, you know, safe places to go to and things like that that can involve families?
We do have our children advocacy program where, you know, a lot of times, you know, survivors will talk about wanting to get their children in the services because, you know, perhaps they're, you know, exhibiting, you know, certain behaviors that worry them. This can be, you know, during or even after, you know, the relationship has ended.
We hear about these things like perpetuate themselves from generation to generation.
Yeah.
And how do we teach and learn? I guess.
Right, and that's key. And you know, like I said, our children's program will see children as young as 3, and you know they will see you know up to 19. And you know, it's talking about those healthy relationships, and you know, boundaries, and you know, certain behaviors, and addressing those.
You've been so helpful with it's covering so many areas here of first step and what options are available to move in the right direction, Jenny. But and I don't like to get bogged down in statistics. Even one person suffering through this is too much. But are we seeing, I mean, as we like to think we are a more educated society, are we seeing things getting better? Or in the midst of all of the turmoil that some are arguing is coming from, you know, from a national level down to communities, is that making things worse in terms of this terrible issue? What are you seeing on the front lines?
Yeah, because it is so underreported, you know, that makes it a bit of a challenge. But the talking about it is happening more. And I think that's where we see, you know, more people, you know, coming forward and, you know, sharing their story or, you know, seeking help and, you know, kind of reaching out. So it seems like, you know, the more education that goes out there regarding domestic violence, you know, there seems to be kind of an uptick and, you know, people, you know, talking more about it and maybe reporting. But the reality is that it's been there. And so to, you know, say it's, you know, increasing or decreasing, I think it's just more of, there's more of a light being shed on it. So it looks, you know, it's always been there. And now it's, you know, something that, you know, we want to continue to talk about and continue to educate other, you know, organizations and agencies and, you know, different systems. But it's just something that, you know, we can, you know, we see more of because it's something that, you know, we're just really starting to bring a lot more awareness to.
And that is, you know, pardon the pun, but that is the first step, that awareness. And sometimes, you know, obviously when it comes to physical violence, if you've been, you know, struck, if you've been, you know, physically intimidated, damaged, things like that, I think that's something a lot of us, you know, we understand that's easy to see. But making that step to get help is another. And then also the awareness that there are other types of, you know, of domestic violence that can take place within a household. So getting the awareness there, getting people involved and contacting the organization, and then finding the resources to help them. Obviously, that's something that they will probably carry with them for the rest of their lives. Once they're safe and go through the counseling services, you know, I'm just trying to figure out what is the end point of your, you know, involvement with people, or is it maybe a lifelong situation that people need to have in terms of counseling and you know, talking to people?
Well, it depends on each individual survivor.
Sure,
absolutely. And what they need. And, you know, and depending on, you know, which program, you know, they feel would be best for them. And sometimes, you know, survivors go through multiple programs. And, you know, but when it comes to the counseling, I mean, see, this is a trauma that, you know, is lifelong. I mean, this is something that, you know, people go through, and, you know, there are times that, you know, a survivor can, you know, go through counseling and feel that they're in a good place, and then, you know, sometimes, you know, they may come back, you know, just to, you know, more of like it's like a tune-up. You know, you want to talk more, you want, maybe something's happened and it triggered something in them. So it really depends on, you know, what the needs are of the survivor. You know, we've certainly had people that have been able to, you know, have counseling for a little while and feel that they got what they needed and they felt like they were in a good place. And then, you know, we'll have survivors that, you know, come back and, you know, just need to reconnect.
And the good news is that First Step is going to be there and continues to do amazing things. I've heard a couple of wonderful success stories of people that have gone through First Step support services and then have gone on to volunteer at First Step as someone to support and help others that are going through what they might have gone through. So it really is, it can be just a very wonderful experience on the other side of all this. We want to thank you again, Jenny, for your time and your effort in what you're doing and all of the both the workers and the volunteers at First Step. What can we do to help? What can the general Dearborn Metro Detroit community do on a general basis to help keep this organization thriving and being available for people when they need your help?
So if you visit our website, and, you know, we keep an updated list of, you know, they're called wish lists. And, you know, we have one, you know, specific for children. And, you know, I mean, the holidays are coming. And, you know, First Step offers, you know, a space for families to be able to come and, you know, get that assistance and, you know, because this is a hard time. So, you know, when survivors are going through this, so, you know, our clients are able to, you know, be able to stay connected with us. And, you know, when we are able to keep, you know, these wish lists, you know, stocked, then it makes that journey just that much easier.
We have gone through the hotline numbers, both the national hotline as well as the First Step 24-hour helpline, and we'll give those numbers again in just a moment. But before we do that, Jenny, if somebody does want to reach out to make a donation, to contribute in some way, should they just go right to the website, or is there, and what is the website specifically, or is there also a number that they can call for general information, or maybe to bring somebody out into their community group to talk about this issue and talk about opportunities to provide additional support?
Awesome. So our website is firststep-mi.org. To do a donation, I mean, you can, like I said, you can come to our Wayne location or our Plymouth location, but if you go to the website, it'll actually give you the listed ways of being able to donate. And it also has our wish lists on there as well.
And for people who need help, obviously, you mentioned, you know, you have locations in Plymouth and Wayne, which are probably small offices and things like that. Mm-hmm. But for people who are in emergency situations, you probably don't publicize the locations that they go to because of the fact that they're in an emergency situation. How do they get a hold of you? What is that, you know, what is that first step from that, you know, for anybody who needs that help right now?
Calling our 24-hour helpline is usually the best way to be able to engage the services. So then, because we also have our assault response program, where, you know, those that are in immediate crisis or have, you know, perhaps even had to go to the hospital or, you know, are in a safe location, are able to call into our 24-hour helpline, and they're able to assess, you know, what's going on, what would, you know, need to be the next step. And, you know, they have access to all of our different programs.
Great. Again, that number is 734-722-6800. That's 734-722-6800 for First Step locally. And then the National Domestic Abuse Hotline, should you be listening to us via the Internet somewhere else around the country or even the world, well, especially the country, 800-799-7233. That's 800-799-7233. Jenny, do you have anything you'd like to share that we didn't get into today? Any last-minute thoughts? What keeps you going in this, what must be a very challenging and difficult experience day by day, being involved in such difficult things going on?
What keeps me going is, you know, the work that when everybody in the agency does, and, you know, but it's really the survivors. It's their strength is, it's amazing. it is, you know, empowering just to even see, you know, a survivor's strength and being able to be that support for somebody that, you know, just needs that assistance. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, sometimes survivors, you know, they don't see themselves the way others see them. And, you know, they're incredibly strong. And to endure and to, you know, move through systems and, you know, work with other people and trust other people with their story. So it's always been an honor working with survivors because it's, you know, building that trust and, you know, being that support person.
Jenny Hooper is the program coordinator for the community response team for First Step Michigan. And Jenny, thank you so much for being with us today on the WHFR Journal.
Thank you for having me.
I want to mention one more time the phone number for those who might be listening to this who are in need of support and in need of help for First Step Michigan is 734-722-6800. It's been a pleasure talking to you, but as I'm sure we all realize, it's a burden having to talk to you, we're just glad to be able to get the word out about the work that you do and the organization does, and we're thankful to have you here on the WHFR Journal.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you.
I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. Thank you so much for being with us this Friday afternoon. Kitty Love is up next for a trip down Highway 61. Let's get into some blues here on WHFR Making Waves.
Bunker Labs is a national nonprofit that seeks to inspire veterans and their spouses to start their own businesses and then equips them with the right training and connections to grow those businesses. Bunker Labs Detroit is inviting you to celebrate the start of Bunker Connect. Bunker Connect, created in partnership with the Schultz Family Foundation, accelerates the success of the veteran community by convening a robust network of resources, networks, and mentors. We will be celebrating the start of Bunker Connect on October 29th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Space Lab 7 Mile, located at 12908 West 7 Mile Road, Suite 200, Detroit, Michigan 48235. Food, drinks, and lots of business contacts will be provided. Please contact us at detroit@bunkerlabs.org for more information.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.